You're listening to
Hot Garbage.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Hot Garbage Podcast, your weekly music playlist. Thank you so much for joining us this week. We hope you like the show. If you do, we hope you tell a friend. My name is Drew. Joining me as always is the muscle to my oyster, my dear friend, Andy.
Picture me rolling, Drew.
Oh, I picture it, Andy. I've got a clear image of you rolling. I've seen it. I've seen you rolling.
I try to make sure you see it.
Our silent partner, Nate, is joining us, making the sound happen as he does each and every week. I don't know, Andy, most people haven't seen Nate, and they definitely haven't heard much of him, but he's looking good these days.
Yeah.
Have you noticed just an uptick in just his physical appearance?
It's
always a handsome man, don't get me wrong, but he's gone from a 7 to an 8.5. Easy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Easy. Really, really making the sound and the pictures happen. He's like the Clark Gable of the Hot Garbage Podcast.
Mm-hmm.
Andy, I was on the way over here, and I drove past, we've talked about this a couple times, I drove past that fucking super deluxe fast food restaurant.
Yeah.
And there were like 25, and I'm not being hyperbolic, there were like 25 people waiting in the drive through there. And I just want to say to people within, you know, the Portland area and people everywhere, there is no fast food restaurant that's ever worth 25 people waiting in line.
Yeah, it's like an hour waiting.
When you see that, I want you all to look at yourselves really, really closely and just like take yourselves out of that game. Don't be one of those people that waits in line, Portland. You don't need to do that.
I started waiting in that line, Drew.
Did you?
I waited 15 minutes and I moved one car. And I abandoned ship and got out of that parking lot before
you
it was
abandoned
stuck.
Your car. You put your car in park and just walked out of it.
I left it.
Nate's got an alternative scenario. That's true. If you're going to be stupid enough to wait in that goddamn line,
we hope you're one of
our
fans.
Then at least be smart enough to listen to the Hot Garbage Podcast while you're doing so. You fucking moron.
You know what? I think it's going to be pretty good though, because I'm going to go do it this week.
Well, yeah, Godspeed, I suppose.
But you know, we're also living in a town with a lot of really good burgers. So I'm just going to wait this one out. I'm going to wait till it's not quite so busy.
What I just don't understand, it just doesn't seem to bode well that a fast food restaurant in this particular part of town would have a line. That just seems like an ill omen for everything.
I don't know. I've waited in the Taco Bell parking lot across the street, or the Taco Bell drive-thru across the street at 2 in the morning for a good 40 minutes.
So have I, but that's out of gross incompetence on the part of Taco Bell. That has nothing to do with people's perception of what the food is. Like, the food, everyone knows what they're getting, and everyone wants it badly. And they're really bad at delivering it in a timely fashion. This Super Deluxe, I don't know, people have just decided that it's somehow something good. We hear it's good. All right, fine. Do whatever you want, everybody. That's the lesson. If you take nothing else from this podcast, just do what you want, you know? You do you.
I've waited in lines for some dumb shit in this town, so I'll probably do it.
What's an example?
Too.
What's the dumbest thing you've waited in line for?
Donuts. Concerts,
oh, you've done
sneakers.
The donut game?
Oh, yeah.
Voodoo or yeah. Blue Star?
I've waited in the Voodoo line. I've never waited in the line at
Pips?
Blue Star. Yeah, I've gone to Pips.
Yeah. But
no lines.
Okay. What about, there's, for people who are outside the Portland area, there is an ice cream place, and again, I mean, it's just ice cream. There's nothing special about it, It's called Salt and Straw, and people
know.
Wait for, like, 30, 40 people deep to go to that stupid place.
Well, I mean, if you're asking me, there's something special about having some bone chaw on your ice cream. Bone chaw and black pepper is a hot flavor.
Yeah, I mean, does the diarrhea that accompanies it, is it any smoother? No, it's not. It's the same lactose diarrhea that you all get from any ice cream. You could just go to 7-Eleven and have the same diarrhea experience.
Yeah, just put a little bit of cigarette ash in it.
And maybe a little sip of coffee.
And a little strawberry essence. No, that's bullshit too, because guess what? That ice cream's good as fuck. Salt
it's
and straw
fine.
Is delicious.
It's good ice cream. There's no, there, but it's not like, what is it better than everything else? Is it better than
no,
Dairy Queen?
It's not better than everything else. And I don't want to blow up my spot, but I like going to Cloud City. Ooh, in the Woodstock neighborhood, and they make their own ice cream, and it's very good.
I like it. How's the line there? What's the line situation like?
It's getting longer sometimes.
Oh, is it? All right. Maybe everything's ruined. Maybe the world is a terrible place, and you just wait in line for everything.
Maybe people just like good ice cream, and they go to the same places I go to.
You know what's great about this podcast, though, Andy? There's no lines. It is on fucking demand, and it always delivers.
Unless you have really shitty bandwidth, and then you have to wait in the line.
Don't stream. Just download. Download when you go to bed. Hit download before you go to bed in your dial-up home, and it'll be ready for you in the morning.
Yeah.
Andy, I think whatever your wait is, whatever kind of line there might be for a podcast, this is the week to wait in that line. Because our guest this week was Maria Massa, who plays in a band called Maria Massa and the Mood. She is a soul singer. She's played with Katie Lang. She's played with Earl Thomas and the Pain. And she just released an album this year called Shine a Light, which you can get on Bandcamp, you can get it on Spotify, you can find it a lot of different places. But an awesome guest. She's a really talented performer, a beautiful voice. And we had a great conversation with her about how her career is developing. We talked about her aversion to murder, which was a positive that we learned about her.
Yeah, that's good.
And we played a little scenarios in stereo where we found out, you know, how comfortable or uncomfortable she might be with the idea of puking versus pooping. So I don't think you can ask for much more in an episode of Hot Garbage. What are your thoughts?
I think this one's got it all. This is a great jumping on point for new listeners, so thanks for checking us
out.
And we're sorry for rambling so much at the beginning, because we know you hate that.
No,
from
no.
all the emails you send us about how much you hate that part.
I don't know. I don't read the emails. But I encourage people to write them, nonetheless. You can check out Maria on her website to find out everything about her. She's got a beautiful website full of media and information. It's MariaMassa.com. That's MoreaMassa.com. And we definitely suggest you check it out. I think after you listen to this episode, you'll be rushing to your internet browser to figure out what she's up to.
Rebooting that dial-up.
Yeah. So please enjoy our conversation with Maria on this week's episode of Hot Garbage.
Doubt's a lot like sauerkraut.
So, Maria Massa is a pretty cool name.
Thanks.
It's a pretty great name, especially if you're going to be a performing artist and your band, The Mood. That's pretty solid. But did you ever consider, as a solo performer, like calling yourself something else? Like the way like Badly Drawn Boy is just one guy, but he's got a name.
Or Bright Eyes.
Yeah, Bright Eyes.
That's a good example,
yeah.
Sure.
Or Bon Iver.
I thought about just going, you know, with like Madonna is like, you know, Maria.
That's pretty solid too. You can get away with that.
Yeah. Yeah. That works too.
I've had like a couple of bands that I've been in. My first ever band when I was 15 was the Ruby Pines.
That's pretty good.
That's a great name too.
That was a duo. But no, I...
Sounds like a boutique ice cream brand, too.
Yeah.
It sounds delicious.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
After that, I was kind of like, I want to just play under my name, because I was also starting to, like, play with lots of different people and sing for a lot of different people, and I just wanted to, like, have my name be the main thing, and then The Mood be, like, a rotating cast of... whoever.
So The Mood was your choice too. You selected that name for the collective that plays with you?
Yeah. So my old bandmate in the Earl Thomas actually came up with The Moods. And I was like, what about The Mood? And then that kind of stuck. Yeah. I put out like a post on Facebook one day, like Maria Massa and like I got all sorts of really horrible answers. But that was one of the good ones.
What was the worst one? Can you remember one that stuck out that was
bad? Just like really dorky ones, like, you know, the sunflowers.
The buttercups.
Like just all sorts of really cheesy things.
Maria Massa and the Monsters would have been pretty solid. Did anyone suggest the Monsters?
Nobody suggested
it's
that.
It's not too late.
Yeah, it's not too late.
I'm not a big social media person, so I miss all kinds of listener polls all the time. So many good ideas gone to waste. It's interesting. So performing under your name, obviously there's some utility because you're in a lot of different projects, and that gives you an opportunity to, you know, kind of market yourself a little bit. Was that the thinking, or is it really just, how do you make that decision that you wanted to put your name front and center?
Yeah, so I was in a duo with this guy for like 6 years, from when I was 15 to 20. What's the math on that?
24, math serves.
Yeah, exactly. And it was so, like, there was some weird stuff where he was like, he would get like kind of weird if I would go play with other people, and like it was just like it got to be kind of weird towards the end. And so that was part of the reason why I left the group. And like, I just didn't feel independent. Like, I couldn't, like, I wrote all these songs with him, and I couldn't just like go and play out on my own if I wanted to. Or like, you know, I was going to school in England at the time, and I wanted to like play my songs with other people, and I just like couldn't do that because I felt like,
because all you had was his vocal track on an iPod,
and I just felt like after that I was like, I really want to just like learn to play the guitar and like write my own songs and like see what it feels like to just be able to stand on my own two feet and like, yeah, work with whoever I want, whenever, like, just to be able to have that independence a little bit. Mm-hmm. I wanted to like experiment with that after being in a band for so long that I kind of felt like a little bit trapped in after a while.
Was the feeling of being trapped at all related to kind of like your creative output? Did you feel as if you were sort of stifled as being a part of something and you wanted to be more independent on the creative side?
I don't know how much you want to get into it, but it was more about my relationship deeply with the other person too. Like, I think that he didn't really want me playing with other people, which was, and like, he wanted to kind of like have it be just him and I, and like, he didn't want me to be able to go out and like play the tunes elsewhere. Right. Like, he was like, this is our band, this is our thing.
Like a codependency kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's him and I, Aquem and I.
What? Yeah. And so that was a little bit like, okay, now I want to just like, yeah, I want to be able to just like be able to go and do my own thing. Like, mm-hmm. I was traveling a lot, and I felt like, I wanted to like, I feel like when you travel, you can go and like play music is like a universal language, no matter where you are in the world. You can be like, yeah, let's jam on these songs, and then they can be your songs or they can be standards or whatever. But like, I felt like at the time, like, I want to be able to like sit down and play the guitar and like jam with whoever's in the room, like whenever, wherever. And like, I didn't feel like I could do that when it was before. So yeah, that's partly why I felt like I was in this like stubborn phase where I was like, I want to just have my name and I want to be able to like do my thing and then like choose who I play with. And you know, maybe it was like a little stubborn at the time. And that's why eventually I added the mood, because I was like, I want to feel like I want my band to feel included and what,
right?
Because they're a huge part of what I do. And like,
well, that's the time in your life when you can be, you know, you can be a little stubborn and petulant. You know, people are teenagers, and you're kind of finding who you are anyway. So I'm sure there's a lot of just like self-discovery and identity that comes into that.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, that was a big part of it for sure.
Mm-hmm. Now, you've been playing music like from a very, very young age. It seems like that's been always a part of your life. But how did it really get started? What was sort of your introduction to performing and creating your own music? Was there a moment, or was it just very natural?
It has really always been something that I've done. Like, I've been singing since I could talk. And, like, before I kind of knew that it was a thing that you can do, like, I was just, like, going around the house, like, writing books of poetry and, like, making up songs. And
it's weird that your parents taught you to sing as it were talking.
Yeah.
So it's a cool move, though, to do to a kid. You just be like, we only sing in this house. This is normal.
I just like started singing before I knew it was a thing. Like, I was just doing it constantly. Like, it drove my parents nuts. Like, they were constantly just like,
hated singing.
Like,
very anti music.
Yeah, my dad as a tiny kid always be like, Morea, there's more than one person in this house, Morea. Like, he would like put up with me for so long, and then he would just be like, come on, like, just like, so yeah.
Enough is enough. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, we've been listening to you for like 5 hours now, like, moment of silence. But no, I mean, they're the most supportive ever. But yeah. I feel like.
Were your parents musical? Was there something that introduced you to this? No. Or was it just, it's like, yeah. It's born in you?
Yeah, I think there was like one point when I was younger and I was like, hey, mom, you want to hear this song? And I like sang my mom a song and she was like, you're really good. And that was like the moment that I remember. I think I was like 7 or 8, maybe younger, that I was like, oh, it's like a thing that like people do, like people sing. I just like didn't know it before. And then from there, I just like kind of. My mom was like a little bit pushy. She always was telling me to like, she'd always be like, my daughter's a really good singer. And then like would have me sing in front of people. And like, oh, I know that mom that does that, but I'm actually really grateful for it.
Did you have some standards ready? Like when you're in a, like a dinner party with your parents and you're put on the spot, did you have a go-to? Some Barbara Streisand?
I forget what. Maybe like Amazing Grace when I was really young. I used to sing that.
I wish it was America the Beautiful. I wish you would just bust out a real tear-jerking rendition of America the Beautiful.
Oh, Amazing Grace is a powerful.
That's a pretty good one.
No.
Yeah, and then
that makes old people so happy.
Oh yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. And then I just started doing like performing as often as I could in whatever capacity I could, and I started taking. Voice lessons from a gospel pastor in town, in North Portland at, this church. And when I was 11, and that like kind of changed everything for me. That was like, yeah, it's really hard for me to be like, this is the moment. 'Cause I feel like it's just right. Always like, even when I was really young, when I found out that it was something that you could do for a living, like I was like, that's what I'm gonna do. And like I've never like thought I was gonna do anything else. Like that's for as long as I can remember. That's what I wanted to do.
Well, I'm really interested in that because I think that is a rare thing, and I do want to get into the rest of your journey a little bit. But you also put out a record this year.
Yeah.
It's called Shine a Light. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful.
Thank you.
Tell us a little bit about you know, kind of the experience of recording this and what this means as a part of your career.
Yeah. Well, it was kind of a long process. It was like kind of 3 years in the making. And it was, yeah, after I kind of left this other band that I was in, I was like, I want to write a new record. Kind of what I'd been doing with this other person was like more folky, and my roots are all soul. Like when I sit down and play the guitar and I sing soul music, and that's the music that I grew up on. And then I like got in this folk band because I live from Portland, you know, so mm-hmm. That's just what you do when you're in Portland. Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. But then I was like,
we've okay, all been in a few folk bands.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then I was like, well, what is it that I want to do? What is it that when I sit down, what's like my most authentic voice and like what was coming out with soul music? So I wanted to make that record, and that was kind of the music I was like listening to a bunch. And so I emailed my favorite producer on a whim, just like, I don't know that he'll even respond to my email, but I kind of know him through some mutual friends and maybe he'll respond. And he did. And so this guy Jamos produced it, and he produced like a couple like Emily King records.
Oh, right.
Yeah. And so we like, he lives in New York, and so I got to work with my band here and a couple of dudes in town who helped me engineer, who recorded it, and then we'd like send it to him and he would add like beautiful strings and things to it. And yeah, the record really is about like, I feel like this last couple years I've been kind of like digging into my past, and I feel like we're doing this as a country, but just like really like uncovering a lot of like darkness from my past, and like just really looking at myself in the mirror and being like, okay, I have to face myself to like be a better person. Mm-hmm. And I feel like we're like I was saying, we're doing that as a country right now. We're really like uncovering a lot of darkness.
Yeah.
And like facing it. And it's like pretty ugly right now, but it's like a lot. I've heard a lot of people be like, you know, I'm grateful that like it's being exposed, you right. know, because it's always been there, but we've just been like better at ignoring it. So I feel like I've been doing that personally. And then, yes, so the record is really about kind of like, I mean, it's called Shine a Light. So I'm a picture like shining a light, taking a flashlight and shining it on like a lot of like the dark and dusty corners of my brain and like like facing them, illuminating yeah. them.
It's like if you put off going to the dentist, it's yeah. like time is your enemy. Yeah. Every yeah. day that you wait is worse.
Until that yeah. dentist shines that light in your mouth.
And that's right.
Yeah.
Points out all the dirty little secrets.
I think that's a, you know, your that's story was exactly great, but a better metaphor. Sure. Yeah.
yeah.
But can we listen to a little? I know you have a couple songs to share. Is there sure. a particular one you'd like to start us out with?
Let's start. Why don't we start with Shine a Light?
Let's do it.
Okay.
And this is, so this is like the mission statement, huh?
Yeah.
All right. Let's check it out.
The scissors cut your hair, screaming on the kitchen floor. In the closet, I stayed hiding there, trying so hard to ignore the noise. You burst me black and blue, but I still comforted you in the fall. You burst me black and blue, but I still comforted you when it all came down. Shine a light on dark corners of my mind. Shine a light on me.
Shut up!
What a lot of people don't know is when we're listening to somebody's music on our show, we're just staring at them silently.
Yeah.
Yeah. My looking. Mouth is open just a tiny little bit. It's really discomforting.
Mm-hmm. I'm watching all their micro functions on their face. What is that? Not micro functions. That sounds very strange.
Microaggressions is what you're thinking.
Yeah.
My real passive aggressive stuff.
Yeah.
No, that was beautiful. It's a beautiful song. I'm curious. You know, we have a lot of different kinds of bands on here, and for a lot of people, like two guitars, bass, and drums, I think people kind of understand that. But this is the kind of music that I don't think people have a lot of experience kind of like banging around on their own. So what is the process for developing one of your songs kind of start to finish? How does it begin, and how do you kind of craft it over time?
I mean, they're always different. I do a lot of co-writing. I did a lot of co-writing on this record with my friend Catherine Feeney, who's an incredible songwriter in town. She's one of my favorite songwriters ever. I don't know if you guys are familiar, but you should check her out. She and I would just get together for a couple hours, like once a week. And a lot of times it would just be like we would talk about like the song we wrote the song on the record Conversation, and we wrote it about like sexism and like our experiences with sexism and like the industry, but just in general. And we sat and we would just talk for hours and hours, and then like in the last like 30 minutes we'd be like, okay, what about this? And like we'd come up with an idea for like a melody, and then we'd maybe like kind of try to put some chords to it, and then maybe my partner Steve would help me put a few more chords to it, and then like we'd develop it from there. There are songs where like, yeah, a lot of times I'm developing the songs, like, guitar, vocals, or maybe keys and vocals, and then I kind of, like, add arrangement stuff on top of it later with the band. Like, I just was working on a new song with my band before I came here, and
we interrupted it.
No.
For a silly podcast.
No, not at all. And, yeah, I came up, me and the guitar player in my band, we wrote it together, and we were, like, sitting down, we wrote the song, and then now we're, like, you know, I'm arranging the background vocals, and, like, we did, like, put the arrangement together.
So does it always start with a concept? Is it like is the lyrical intent kind of the core of it, and you build things out for there, or how do you know when there's a little kernel that's the right thing to start building on?
Yeah, it really depends, but like sometimes I'll just sit down and I'll start jamming on the guitar, and then a melody will come out, and the melody will inspire new lyrics. But and that's how it's been happening for me a lot more lately. But there's often times where if I'm like really writing in a writing mood and I'm like writing a ton, then I'm like just writing like words every day, and then kind of like maybe an idea or a concept will be swimming around in my head, and then when I go to sit down at the guitar like or the piano, like it starts to just come out because I've been thinking about it already.
What do you want to eat right now?
What do I want to eat right now? What do I really like
in like a perfect fantasy
you can
world
eat
to get
anything.
Some noodles would be really delicious.
Really?
And then some cookies probably.
Ooh. So we're talking noodles, what's the sauce, what's the flavor, or are we just talking about buttered noodles?
This is like not very nice. Like this is I don't want to talk about what I can't eat right now.
Oh, right. I'm sorry.
Yeah, you're all brothed up for listeners
I've
out
had
there.
My broth for
We've
dinner.
Been watching you drink
I'm gonna start like
I just knew that was on the tip of your mind.
Oh
like, I
yeah
bet she's thinking,
this would be the perfect time really to dig deep into what you love to eat because everything is denied to you.
Oh,
and you can appreciate
yeah
it that much more.
Oh
when
man, I love like okay, there's at Expatriate they have these crab noodles.
Mm. Oh man, that sounds good.
And
that does sound
good. So good. And that's mm-hmm what I would eat right now if I could.
Yeah. Nice. But you can't.
But
I would eat
because I'm here with you guys.
I would eat an entire can of chocolate cake frosting
right now.
Wow. Right now,
that's what you would get
dome
into.
Yep.
All right, man.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Not even a good one. Just one from the corner store.
All right.
Just mostly it's butter and a little bit of sugar. I love it.
Hmm.
Right now, I mean, I bet you halfway through that I would regret it. But right now it sounds awesome.
I would like a banana split blizzard from Dairy Queen.
Nice.
But they add the chocolate, you know, and it's hot and it melts. But I want one that holds its shape.
Like, have you ever seen that chocolate that freezes?
The magic shell stuff.
The magic
shell. Oh, I don't know about this.
It's the kind that they dip cones in and it gets like hard.
Oh, sure, sure. Yeah. I've seen
running around with cold things.
That would be a wonderful addition to my non-melty banana split blizzard.
There we go.
There we go.
That's what I would eat right this second. Figured it out. What a meal. Crab and a chocolate can and
just a can of frosting.
Just some confection.
Oh, man, that sounds good.
Andy, what have you been listening to recently? I know you got some jams to share. Yeah.
You know I have.
What's on the top of your list?
It's always something on my list.
Mm-hmm.
Not stalling at all.
Well, that inaccessible list that...
Yeah, I got all kinds of stuff.
I ran out of things
mainly,
to
say. You know, let's start off with this. This is a band. This is a collection of music by a person. Her name is Emily Daniels, and you know her better probably as Cloven Pink.
I like how the definition of a band is a collection of music by a person. Yeah, that's a pretty good way to describe what a musical artist is.
Yeah.
This is a band. It's a collection of music by an artist.
She plays glittery acoustic folk that lives right inside your heart.
I like glittery.
Yeah, and this is just some music she's been recorded over the last 7 years. She decided to finally put it out to the world, and it's a bunch of good stuff. This is a song off of that called Old Salt, and she's also an awesome illustrator and artist around town, so check her out in that way, too. But you can find her stuff at clovenpink.bandcamp, and this is really good, cool stuff.
And what's the name of the artist?
Cloven Pink.
Cloven Pink, all right.
Can't lean that much.
Yeah, but 23 packs of mustard is too many for one sandwich.
Your son mustarded up a sandwich with 23 packets.
Yeah. Well, if you want to be the mustard king, you gotta fight for that throne.
Is that him really liking mustard that much, or is that him just putting 23 packets on one sandwich?
Oh, it's clearly him just putting.
Yeah,
it's nobody likes mustard that much.
Yeah, he swears that he loves mustard. But I think that killed it for him just a little bit.
Did he eat it? Did he eat that sandwich?
Yeah, he claims to have eaten that sandwich.
That sounds like some soggy bread.
He's 8.
That's really cute. and
it's sort of silly. It's sort of cute.
Yeah. He just kept running around going, I got mustard for days.
That's so cute.
There's a band name for him.
Yeah.
Maria, we do a segment occasionally called Scenarios in Stereo. And we give you kind of a hypothetical situation and you just kind of talk through the choices that you would make. And I'm wondering if you're game to to give it a shot.
Okay.
No wrong answers, but only one of two answers will be available to you. So the first scenario is, you know, it's kind of aligned with what we were just talking about. It's a little bit gross, so hopefully you can bear with it. Would you rather every 41 times that you fart, it's a full poop? Just like every 41st, on the 41st fart, it's coming out full bore. Or would you rather every 67 sneezes, you vomit?
Oh, man.
It's hard to keep, like, you think to yourself, oh, 41 farts, I can keep track of my farts, but that counts the ones that happen while you're asleep, that counts the ones that are sort of like rapid fire, you know, and you lose count, and all of a sudden you're far away from a toilet around the 40th time.
Oh, man, they could really make you a shut-in. You'd really have to plan.
And the sneezes are even worse because, you know, I don't know how you sneeze, but... One, two, three.
That's my thought. I think sneezing is way less controlled and more random. So I think I would be puking randomly. I would be like, oh, shit, I'm about to sneeze and I'm inside a building. Whereas with the farting one, like, I think I could think about it a little bit more.
Okay, but also with, like, the vomit one, like, I feel like that's one that you could, like... Like, make an excuse. Like, you know, if you were in public and you, like, vomited, you could just be like, oh, my God, I'm so sorry. I just, like, all of a sudden got sick. Like, whereas you, like, shit your pants, like, you're kind of, like,
you're really
kind of screwed for, like, the rest of the day. Right? Yeah. And, like, if you vomit, you can at least, like, vomit, like, not on yourself.
Yeah, you can be pretty good about it.
Yeah. So yeah. I guess that's the one I'd
You can rather. Vomit on people you don't like onto
exactly.
them.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's really satisfying if you're on like a marble floor, if you need to vomit or something yeah. like that. There's a good splat. So you would choose the vomiting over the
yeah.
pants pooping.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I think I would too because I just want to change in my life. Yeah. I'm kind of living
you
want to that
mix
life
it up.
Right now.
You yeah. already have a version of that other one?
Yeah, I'm living that life. I don't know what it is. I'm not sure what my number is, but I don't think I love her now. I think it changes
I think it's
constantly.
More like 7.
Yeah.
I don't think it's 41.
Yeah.
If only you were so lucky.
I'm in a state of current preparedness.
I will make a small case for the pants pooping because when you're out in the world, you can always sort of hold in that fart. So even if you don't know where the count is... You know the last time it happened, so you can kind of estimate. And I can hold one in until I'm in a place that I can, you know,
yeah,
just let that kind of happen.
That's
and maybe
what
it's
saying.
Not a bathroom. Just... Maybe it's, like, my car. But you know what? Maybe it's not in a job interview. Put it that way.
Yeah.
Whereas that sneeze, maybe it comes out right then.
Well,
just,
with the sneeze,
just some food for thought.
With the sneeze also, you get that little warning or like, oh, I'm going to sneeze. Hand me that trash can, please. And someone will be like, what's wrong? Oh, I always sneeze into a trash can. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure what number I'm on.
Yeah, you could just tell them what's going on here, that you've yeah. been cursed.
You guys are so gross sneezing into your arms and into your hands. I sneeze into a trash can like yeah. a gentleman.
Okay. Maybe that wasn't your cup of tea, but maybe the second scenario will be a little more palatable to you. In the second scenario, you have a choice between never tasting food again. That's one option.
Oh,
or everything you eat is delicious. It's like the best, like... most perfect version of that food, but no matter what, you look as if you've eaten a sloppy Joe without your hands. So every time you eat something, you're gonna get like barbecue sauce in the corner of your mouth, you're gonna
that
spill
one.
On your shirt.
I like food too much and I already do that anyway,
so you just walk around looking like a barbecue covered slob
yeah.
Pretty much in perpetuity.
Yeah. I mean, that's like I always have
like you just
food.
Sipped your broth, but it would look to us as if you were covered in sloppy Joe.
True. Again,
you're good on that.
Again, I think you picked this one because of me. And I live my life in an eternal stain.
Me too.
No, I do too. I've got
yeah.
I was eating I was very daintily eating a wrap today, and I was very conscious of my propensity to spill on myself, and so I was dipping very carefully into this little peanut sauce, and I just looked down and it was there. It was just
all
on my
you.
Shirt.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's my life daily. So
okay, so you're living that curse anyway. Mm-hmm. I would say
and everything I eat is delicious.
Funny that you say that, because that plays into the third scenario. In the third scenario, the bad news is you've been diagnosed with a rare neurological disorder. The good news is you have a little bit of a say in how it manifests itself in your life. Okay. You can either respond whenever appropriate to whatever you're being discussed with an Austin Powers quote, or anytime you describe something positively in any way, you call it delicious. And you say, delicious, just like that. So, like, I like your scarf turns into, your scarf is delicious. Or anytime someone says, hey, you want to go see the show, you have to say, yeah, baby.
Can you say it in a chill way? Do you have to do the Austin Powers voice, or can you just be like,
yeah, sure. Like, if you're saying, if you're like listening to someone, you're like, you would be like, yeah, baby, yeah, baby, yeah, baby. But so it can be very casual, but it would have to be an Austin Powers quote. Every time you referred to sex, it would be shagging. There's that. Or there's anything positive is delicious.
I kind of like the delicious one.
Do you? Yeah. Are you sure? Yeah. Are you absolutely sure that you want to be the person? You want to be that person?
Delicious. I think I might become the delicious guy. That sounds nice.
Yeah,
that
sounds I think I could play it off.
Delicious.
Everything. Everything is delicious.
Yeah.
Oh, no. No. You'd be insufferable. Do you want to be around someone? Imagine your boyfriend. He is afflicted with this neurological disorder. Do you want him to describe everything as delicious? It would be, you know.
It would take a long time to do anything.
I mean.
He takes you out for a nice dinner. Oh, you look delicious. And you'd be like, ugh, it makes my skin crawl just saying.
And you'd be like, do you want some of the sandwich? Is it delicious?
Yeah, but that's food. You're talking about all like. Right. Do you accept this job? Yeah, that sounds delicious.
Yeah.
Think it through.
Yeah, I get that.
Behave.
That makes sense.
I mean, the Austin Power one is pretty bad, too.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've committed to vomiting.
That'll be $45.50 for that gas, sir. delicious.
Exactly. So you'd be a messy slob who vomits periodically. And it's really tough to be around when you're talking about positive things.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nice.
All right. Just wanted you to see yourself as you are. That's all I'm here for. Let's play a little music. Do you have another song that you'd like to share tonight?
Sure. You could do one of mine if you want. We could also play some Catherine Feeney or...
Whatever you're in the mood for. It's dealer's choice. So maybe we could listen to some Catherine if you have a particular song that you'd like to share.
This is a tune that she did a record with Chris Janitas, who's this super talented drummer in town, and he did all the drums on my record also. And it's called White Flight. This whole record is so good. It's hard to choose one, but I love this song.
Norton, robbery, sir. One safe street had bruised my mother's dreams and feelings. We were on a white flight. Everything changed overnight. Closing doors of factories, business moving over. Employment, poverty,
That was awesome.
So yeah. You grew up in Portland.
Yeah.
And you've seen a lot of music venues come and go and close.
Mm-hmm.
If you could play a show in any place in Portland that's not a music venue, what would you pick?
That's not a music
venue. A non-music venue in Portland, a place, where would you want to play?
I really like the Chinese Gardens.
Oh, nice. The one down in Old Town, downtown?
Yeah.
That would be really
cool.
That
would be a good spot to play. I feel like your sound would go well there. It's not like, you know, it's not abrasive in any way. It's very smooth and calming.
Yeah, I love that place. Kind of a little bit of a sanctuary.
Mm-hmm.
Have you ever thought about not living in Portland? Because you've been here. I mean, I know you do a lot of traveling and you've done a lot of touring. Mm-hmm. Have you ever thought about relocating? Has that ever been a part of your kind of like career trajectory?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I lived in Europe for a couple of years and that was amazing. But it was, I have thought about it, but Portland's such an amazing home base. And like the more and more I travel, the more I realize how lucky I am to be able to live here. And like the other cities that I would want to live in are just so expensive. And Portland's getting there, but it's nowhere
it's
near
trying.
Like San Francisco or New York. No. Like I can still pay $500 in rent, you know, like, right. And live in like a giant house with a garden and like, you know, like, you just can't do that in other places that like LA or San Francisco or New York. Like if I could, I've like daydreamed about living in New Orleans, but there's other things.
Right on Bourbon Street.
Yeah.
Right in the heart of it.
Exactly. I love New Orleans.
I've never been to New Orleans. It's one of my blind spots in the U.S.
It's
I only
really
go,
magical.
I go there every time I listen to Dr. John.
Yeah.
I've also never been there.
I love New Orleans so much. It is a very magical place. But I would be, like, probably dead if I lived there. Because it's just, like, so easy to eat, like, all the most amazing and delicious food. But, like, like, intense. And then, it's easy to, like, drink and party so much there. Because it's just, like, culture. But, yeah. I love Portland. Like, it's kind of scary to see how much it's changed since I grew up here, but I'm like, want to ride it out as long as I can.
Right.
Yeah.
Me too. I mean, I came here, I chose to be here. And I've seen it change a lot too, but I want to stick it out. I love this place. And I think a lot of people feel that way when they get here. There does seem to be something unique about it.
Yeah.
Did you ever feel as if, again, just from maybe a visibility point of view, that you needed to be in a different place? Has it ever been a consideration of yours when you think about, I don't know, furthering your career or creating more visibility?
Sure. Yeah. I have some friends who live in LA who, right down the street, like, they can go see, like, some of my favorite musicians just play, like, a casual, like, Wednesday free show jam or whatever, like for 50 people, you know. And I'm just like, oh man, that would be so amazing. And they're just like, the scene in different places is way more connected. But I love having it be like a place that I can come back to, because I've been touring a lot recently, and like this fall I'm like gone for 4 months and basically just like nonstop touring. And it's just so nice to be able to like come back here, and like it's such a nurturing place to come back to. Yeah, I've totally thought about it, but it's like most of my friends that are living in other places, it's so they're working their asses off, like doing waitressing or like whatever it is that's not their art. And like, I can afford to do art for a living in Portland. And like, that's not,
which is amazing.
Yeah. So like for that, I like feel more creative here and feel like I can afford to live here, and then I can travel and then come back here. So it's just like, you can't do that everywhere else. So
it's that hustle that like has scared me off. Because I love New York. I could live in New York in a heartbeat. But you know, I'm getting to the age where I just don't want to do that constant hustle just to like be alive.
Yeah, like all my friends that live there that are art, that move there for the art, ended up getting like 5 different jobs just to pay their rent. Right.
You got
to
cobble that existence together.
Their art was like being sacrificed. And I was just like, I'd rather live in a place that's maybe not as connected and then travel to New York like once or twice a year and go. I don't know. That's also something I found is like when I go to LA or when I go to New York, you're like the friend, like, all my friends there are so jaded and they're and you like come in and you're like, hey, like you have some like hope for like art because you're like, I can do art as my life. And like they're like, you know, like they're just so jaded. And I'm just like, I just don't want to sacrifice my happiness.
I want to go to New York and just to be in the studio audience of late night talk shows.
Yeah.
You can make a career out of that.
I just want to do it for fun. I want to make it a vacation.
Yeah.
you would be in good company there. I feel like, you know, people like my parents would be, you know, you'd be elbow to elbow with them.
Yeah.
They would love that.
Okay, I have a crazy story about being in studio audience.
Really?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I was on Conan with one of my friends' bands, this band Elvi.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
Conan. Yeah, that's exciting.
And my friends from college that I went to college with in England happened to be visiting LA for like a week or two and happened to just like pick like the ticket. And just happened to be in the audience.
They had not coordinated with this
idea that I was going to be performing.
That's so random.
And messaged me afterward, just like, did we just watch you on Conan? And I was like, were you in the audience? Like, what is that?
They're That's
like,
great.
That's weird on both sides. Yeah.
Then, 2 years later, those same guys were on vacation in LA. Yeah, we're on Conan. Yeah, yeah. And I have.
It was the Abbott brothers.
Yeah, exactly. and I happened to be doing a show with Katie Lang in LA, and they happened to be in the audience and had no idea I was going to be, and just happened to be visiting.
What are they doing?
LA
every time
again.
They go into LA, they just sit in on Conan?
Yeah, they just do all these like, I don't know, go to shows and go.
It does seem very American, I guess. Maybe if you're here, that's what you do.
Yeah, well, that one wasn't on Conan, but that was just like. A show.
Oh, just
that
a show. I see
that they just happen to
just
be in
anytime
the audience.
They go to a show
had no
in America,
idea.
Anytime they do anything in America, you're just in the background.
Yeah,
or at least there.
Singing
just
background
like,
vocals.
Hey, I happen to not be funny. On this show, but I'm backstage. Hi. I'm
just, you know, yeah, just super randomly. Those same people. I don't know. Anyway, I have thought that.
Mm-hmm.
Was like
you go into
really
a Cold Stone Creamery and you're like, hey, I'm not. I don't work here, but I'm also back here.
Yeah,
making just, some ice cream.
Yeah, exactly.
It's for me. I know these guys.
So how do you do touring? Like, cause I'm maybe being judgmental, but I can't imagine you like piling into a van and
oh, I do it.
Is that what it is? It's just okay.
It depends on the tour that I'm on. When I tour with my own stuff, definitely piling in a van. I spent like over 20 hours in a van this weekend driving from Montana and back.
How many people travel with you? What's the usual
It depends.
Size?
For my band, I just did a tour with them for this record, and it was 7 people.
Wow. Yeah.
So
yeah.
Are you all listening to your own headphones and your own music, or are you listening to, like, the same podcast?
Well, it depends. Like, probably half of us are listening to the music that we're putting on, and then other people, like, are doing their own thing. Yeah. No, I definitely have done bus tours, I've done flight tours, and then I've done car tour, van tours. Like,
yeah.
I've done kind of all the...
It's that stink. That stink is the one
the
that gets
spectrum
you.
Spectrum of all of them. I kind of love the piling in the van tours, but...
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's a blast. Anyone who has a chance to do it, even if you're just, like, you know, putting together a long weekend, it's a lot of
even
fun.
Even if you're not going on any kind of a tour, just go hang out in a stinky van.
Just get in a stinky
just
van.
Get that full van stink, and you'll know what we're talking about.
Yeah, I was recently... I've been touring with Katie Lang recently, and that's like the plushest tour I've ever been a part of.
Oh,
that's
man.
Ridiculous. She travels in style. And one thing I found I'm not complaining. Definitely not. Cause I'm really grateful for the whole experience, but it's definitely a little bit more isolating than what I'm used to being on the road in like a van where you're just like hanging out with your friends all the time. And it's so much fun because you like love all your friends and you're just like one big family. And like on the Katy tour, like everybody's quite a bit older than me too. And everybody's like, you play the show, you go back to your hotel room. Right. Like you
everybody's
in bed by like 10:30 and then like you wake up.
Except for Katie Lang. She's wild card.
Yeah, she's crazy.
Doesn't sleep.
Never has.
Yeah. I mean, which is like great.
She plays Jingle Bell Rock, just like she did in that Pee Wee's Christmas special all the time.
Oh, good grab there, man.
Oh man, that was a big part of my childhood.
Yes.
Katie's seared in my brain.
Oh, that's awesome.
And her outfit. I mean, next time you talk to her, just ask if she still has that outfit. It's got some tassels. It's amazing. What's like the best tour story that you have?
Oh.
It can be either something terrible that happened or something really amazing that happened.
The tour that I did, the Conan show on, I was actually on tour with my band after I released my first EP. We did like a little tour. It was me and two girls singing, and like I feel like everything that could have gone wrong like did it. Like we got our car towed, you know, the classic, like our friend was like, you can park in that lot. We park there every night, we never get towed. And then like we got towed. And then we got towed, and one of my bandmates, we went and picked up the car and we did the like take the picture on the road. We're like, yeah, let's take the picture of like our car getting towed and we'll post like how funny it is that our car got towed on tour. And
then you were arrested for taking pictures
of
the tour truck because it's illegal in Tulsa, Oklahoma.
So then we like left, we went to our show, and then the next morning we drove to San Diego. Our show with on Conan was like at 8. We had to be there at like 8 in the morning the next day. And my bandmate on the way, when we got to our gig, realized like, I don't have my shoes. Like we had these outfits for the show that we had like went and shopped for and like got their matching outfits. She's like, I can't find my shoes.
What kind of shoes
like,
were they?
They were like nice black boots.
Okay.
She couldn't find them anywhere. And like, we were like, okay, we'll find them. And she's like, but we have to be on the show tomorrow morning at 8 in the morning. Like, what am I going to wear on TV? Like, all I have are these sandals, you know, like we're just like, can't go on TV with
open-toed
sandals.
Conan.
And so we're like driving back that night and I'm like looking at my Instagram and I notice that like at the tow truck place in the corner of the picture are like her shoes like on the side of the road in the picture. And so
that's some
like,
detective shit right there.
You left your so
I thought you were going to say like there was a picture in the background of one of the tow truck drivers
like
selling
like
the shoes, like cash changing hands.
I thought you were going to say like slowly putting on the boots.
Yeah,
let's try these on.
Got one on and the others.
These are tow truck boots.
It's great to be able to catalog like your mistake and to look back and say, fuck.
Yeah, I mean that tour was one of the first tours that I've ever like planned myself. And it just like all the like first tour stories happened, you know, like we lost the keys also of we had to get the keys made. We like missed a show. I mean, it was just like one thing after another. It was like, it was just like a good, your first tour is always like a good learning lesson of like, okay.
Yeah. And I think that's, it's allowed to be a shit show. That first one, totally. Just, you know, let's get that out of our systems. Let's figure some things out.
Totally.
Awesome. Well, Andy, we should probably play a little bit more music. I know you got at least one more track up your sleeve.
Yeah.
What else is...
These tracks. I have so many. Oh, man. Let's listen to something heavy.
All right. Let's do it.
This is a Seattle band called Sandrider.
Ooh.
They just put out a new album called Armada.
I love Sandrider.
And Sandrider is great. They are... you know, I just found out today as I was listening to this band, both John and Nat from Akimbo are in this band.
I have no idea.
Oh, man. They were like a two-piece... Sometimes three piece. They're a hardcore band from Seattle that was super awesome and super loud, and I really like those guys. And anyways, they're in this band Sandrider, and they're totally not hardcore. They're just kind of this heavy grungy metal. What did I write? I wrote something stupid, but I think it'll describe it better than I'm about to try. So, heavy grungy metal with catchy melodies and hardcore soul.
Yeah,
that's pretty shitty. But it's better than that. It's good. It's awesome. It's just metal that's... It's got... it's got more to it than just metal. You know, there's a lot of other things going on. It's not doom metal.
It's riffy. It's got some grooves. There's mm-hmm. some melody to it. Yeah, it's some good heavy music. I'm down with Sand Rider. Yeah,
and they'll be playing. A lot of fun. They'll be playing Palomino Smokehouse and Social Club in Calgary, Alberta, on September 8th.
Mm. Skip the rodeo. Check out Sand Rider, Calgary. Yeah. Let's hear mm-hmm. it. So one of the things you talked about a couple of times that I'm always really curious about, you know, I think most people kind of consume music and it's part of their lives and it's important, but not a lot of people kind of live it and breathe it and make it their living. And you've talked about the fact that being here in Portland, you can make your living on your art, and that's amazing. But how do you approach kind of the business of making music? What do you think, I mean, how does having to build this as a career and make your living off of it impact the creative process, and how do those things interact with each other?
Yeah, that's a challenging one because there's not always balance. Sometimes the creative part is all consuming and I like am unorganized and bad at the business side of things, and then there are other times where the business side is so consuming that I lose the art, the creative side.
Let me ask you one, like, more pointed question.
Sure.
Because in preparation for you coming on, I was looking at your website, and it's a beautiful website, and there's a lot of information there, and there's a lot of media, and it's attached to your Instagram, and it's very, I don't want to say calculated, but it's obviously, like, comprehensive. It's a great, like, repository for people to come and understand what you're about. Like, how much of that are you kind of, like, thinking about? How much is, like, how much are you putting into a presentation of yourself versus maybe what you're like in the day-to-day? Is there a difference between those two things?
To a degree. I think that one thing I've been thinking about a lot more lately, because especially with putting out a record and like going on tour and having to make all these announcements, like there was definitely a moment when I was getting ready for the tour and to release it, where I was just like, oh my God, this is so much social media. This is so much like putting myself out there. It's like, it's starting to feel like calculated a little bit. And then I like took a step back and I was just like, what do I want to see on social media? What do I want to see from artists? And like the artists that I follow are like really authentically writing stuff on social media. Like they're talking about real things. They're talking about their own real lives. It's not just like, look at how beautiful this photo is. Come see my show, whatever, you know, it's like they're. And so I was just, and I was like, so I was trying to like talk about the process more and just be like, this process is nerve wracking. Like I'm about to put myself out there and like show you like all my like most personal thoughts in a record. Like, hope you guys, you know what I mean? Like I was trying to look at that. It's like the way that I present myself as like more the most authentic, my most authentic self. So that's what I've been, the way that I've been trying to engage with social media, because it's not going in a way, and it is something that we as artists have to do if we want to reach people. And I also think it's kind of cool that you can reach people on these platforms, you know? So I try to approach it in a way that's like almost like my journal or something, you know? Like, how can I just make it the most authentically me?
That seems even more kind of terrifying.
Yeah.
To think of it as your journal.
I mean, yeah, it's definitely vulnerable, but
it's also what I try and do with our Instagram account for the show.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's just, these are real pictures I found on the internet.
Right. It's really like an internet journal.
Yeah, these are things I really saw that I thought were cool. That's why I want all of you to see them.
I think that's, you know, almost exactly like what
that's pretty
Maria
much.
Is
that's
describing.
Exactly. It's close. It's not the same.
Well, pretty much, but yeah.
Another aspect of this that I'm interested in is like, as you become more successful, obviously there's an awareness that people are consuming what you're doing. So not only are people reading your tweets and they're getting a sense of kind of who you are, maybe not tweets, but whatever the social media may be.
But
that was just the thing that came to my mind. But they're also they're listening to your music. You know that people are consuming your music. How do you deal with the awareness that people are listening? Do you ever, if a song's coming to your mind, do you ever think, okay, how are people going to receive this? How do you kind of negotiate that aspect as you become maybe a more popular artist?
Oh, I mean, definitely been thinking about it more and more too, with just being like with what's going on in our world and like wanting to put stuff out there that like makes people think about the way they treat others. And like, I don't know if that, or like, you know, saying something that matters in this time.
So you have an awareness that people are paying attention to you, and you have this opportunity to express something
totally
more meaningful than maybe, you know, Totally. Let's say Nate. Let's just say Nate. Nate's social media footprint, very small. But
yeah, I want to use my platform. But
very high quality.
Yeah, I mean, it's pure. It's fucking pure, but he just doesn't have a lot going on there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I definitely want to use the platform for good. Like, if I'm going to put out positivity or, like, just, you know, helping other people feel less alone in what it is that they're going through, or speaking out about important issues. Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, those are all things that I'm, like, really trying to do and say.
That's why I think this year we're going to go really hard into politics on the Hot Garbage Facebook page. Oh, I would love
to. I'm just waiting for those floodgates to open. Yeah,
I'm going to turn over the website to Drew, and he's going to tell us what he really thinks.
Yeah. I'm like the Alex Jones of music podcasts.
Oh, man.
Just kidding. I'm not.
Nobody wants to hear any of that shit.
No. They don't. Mm-hmm. When you're talking purely about this sort of the songwriting process, do you ever think about whether someone's going to like this song as you're writing it?
Sure.
Okay. Does that ever influence? Is it ever the deciding vote in a decision that you're trying to make in a song? Like, oh, this might be more palatable to an audience versus this. Is that ever part of the thinking that goes into making a song or an album?
I mean, there are all sorts of doubts that come into your mind. Like, even tonight, as I was working with my band, I was like, is this song, like, are these lyrics really cheesy? Like, are people gonna think this is, you know, or what? Or, like, there's been tons of times where I, like, write a song and I'm just like, oh my god, is this too vulnerable to write? Like,
I've heard doubts a lot, like sauerkraut. It's in the fridge. They also say doubt sauerkraut.
Doubt? All right. Yeah.
Some people.
Who are these people?
All of them. Yeah. Think about that the next time you're in the studio.
Yeah.
No, don't let Andy haunt you the next time you're in the studio.
I mean, yeah, I, like, even with Shine a Light, like, that song has some dark content in it, and when I first wrote it, I was like, is this gonna be too much for people? Like, maybe this is just a song for myself. And then I played it for, and so it's about some abusive stuff from my past, and I wrote it and I shared it with one of the guys I was working with to do some recording, and, like, he, like, we had a moment, he was just like, yeah, I had that. I had abuse as a kid too. And, like, then, like, it just, like, opened up this conversation that I was like, oh. And that, like, to me was like a moment that, like, was like, yeah, I feel like the more vulnerable I can be, the more authentic I can be. Like, that's what people are really looking for, is that. And that's what, like, builds connection. And, like, I think music can help people not feel alone in this world, because it's really easy to feel really alone in this world. So, like, if I can be like a musician who's like, hey, we all have, like, if I can show, like, these are these hard times that I've gone through, or just, like, you know, like, you're not alone in your feelings, like, we're in this together.
Now, what does that do for you? To what does it feel like? Like, what is I guess, what is the benefit to you for being so vulnerable and being so authentic? What do you get out of that?
I mean,
geez, Drew.
Yeah. I mean, it, like, brings me a lot of, it means a lot. Like, I've definitely had people come up to me and be like, your music helped me through a breakup, or your music helped me through a death, or, like,
or a murder.
Yeah. Murder. Yeah.
It gave me the courage to murder.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, whoa, gonna have to call the police, but that's cool.
I'm morally obligated to turn you in, but thank you.
no murders,
or mo murders.
Mo murders. Mary Massa and the Mo murders.
That is solid right there. Yeah. That's just bangers. That's like an album of nothing but bangers.
Exactly.
You know,
exactly. Murdering those hits, you know. Yeah, I don't know, what was I saying now? It's derailed.
Mo murders is all I heard.
No, you're just talking about people kind of responding to it. But yeah, I mean, I would think that if you get a little bit of popularity and people know who you are and they have a unique experience that's totally independent of you as a person, but yeah. with something that you've created, I feel like I would think about that all the time.
And I think that there are some spells that help you gain power from that. Yeah. So if you kind of work that into your music, you might be able to gain some level of immortality.
Yeah, I don't know if sorcery is on your mind.
Yeah,
or not,
yeah, that's definitely on my mind all the time. Yeah,
yeah.
Cool.
What type of thing would you be thinking? Like, what would you be thinking about?
I don't know. Like, if you were, I guess you would just have to right now, when I make music, the stakes are purely selfish. Like, everything I do musically is entirely for me. I want people to like it, and I'm thinking, is this song going to be something that people will respond to? But it's entirely through the prism of myself. Mm-hmm. If I don't like something, then I'm never going to make a change. But there are no stakes for me. There's, like, nothing that... There's no... I mean, I don't make my living off of music. And there isn't, like, a rent check on the line. There isn't the next step in whatever kind of career. This is something I do purely as kind of an outlet. It's a hobby. I want people to like it as much as possible. And I want to push that hobby as far as I can. But again, but for you, there's more on the line. And obviously, you've got a ton of talent and, you know... The stuff that you've produced is wonderful, and you've got a lot of experiences that have built your career. But I would just worry is the wrong word. I would just be conscious of that the further down the road I got.
Totally. I definitely am trying to be conscious of it. I'm not at the level yet where I'm that worried. I don't have a label breathing down my neck. I know a lot of artists that get... I know a lot of really personal stories about artists getting to a certain point in their career, going with a label, getting put in rooms with writers that they're not happy with, and writing songs that they hate, like that become their next singles or whatever, you mm-hmm. know, because that's what their label is telling them they need to do to make a hit. And I really hope, and I'm really careful about the people that I have on my team and around me, like... I hope that the people that I'm building now, like, because I've seen it happen so many times that I'm just like, I hope that the people around me, like, tell me if I'm acting like a dummy or my songs suck or, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like I've got good people around me to, like, help keep it humble. You know what I mean?
Well, we will be really honest right now.
Yeah.
The new album is great.
Oh,
yeah, the album.
I thought you were going to be like, it sucks.
No. See, we could have done that if we were being honest, but we are. We're being honest.
That seemed
genuine.
Cautiously, we like you were insulting our guest.
Yeah.
No, the album is great. Honest. It's great. And it's if you really want to email us weekly for some kind of like keep it real check, I will definitely.
Cool.
And yeah. Andy what will say something.
I'll say something that'll confuse the hell out of you.
Sort of zen like.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Yeah.
Doubt sauerkraut.
Yeah.
Stand by that.
Like that. I want you to think of that when the next time you do like a sound check. I want that to flow through your mind. Sorry. Say it. Just say it.
Yeah.
And if people like that, you can claim it as your own.
Yeah. You doubt sauerkraut 1-2.
Perfect. Perfect. That's all I can ask for.
Yeah. Yeah.
We got time for one more song. Do you have one of yours that you want to play? Is there a second track you'd like to play?
How about the single from the... I was going to play something more upbeat, but let's just play the single.
But fuck it, you know?
Yeah,
let's get real with
it. It's called I Can't Tell. And my drummer actually just texted me and was like, are you inspired by this Tolstoy quote? He felt now that he was not simply close to her, but that he did not know where he ended and she began.
He asked if you were
inspired by the quote.
That's a loaded text.
Well, you'll see why.
I'm glad I don't have any friends like that.
Yeah.
No offense to your drummer.
No, it's okay. And I told him, no. I wasn't, but I'll tell people that I am from now on. So yeah, I was totally inspired by that quote, by that Tolstoy quote, you know?
Sure.
It's called I Can't Tell. And I can't tell.
should need. Feel our bodies lose our minds, just you and me. Well, I can't tell where you begin and I end, and I end. I can't tell where you begin and I end, and I end. In this moment, all this moment that could stay forever.
So we're about out of time. A couple rapid fire questions for you. Don't think too hard about this.
Okay.
Are you more of a shark person or more of a dinosaur person? I feel like you're thinking a little bit too hard about
it. Okay, you're right. It's the end of the night. Dinosaur.
Yeah, that's the right answer. All right. When it comes to like bugs under glass, is it butterflies or is it beetles?
Bugs under glass, like, you know, like frame?
Those, yeah, those framed.
Neither.
Okay. That's not really a choice, but I see what you're saying. I get it. You know.
Well, butterflies. But I don't want butterflies. I want them to
They're too beautiful for this world.
They were already dead.
Yeah.
It's for science.
Okay. Then butterflies.
Fair enough. Fingerless gloves or sleeveless jean jackets?
Sleeveless jean jackets.
Okay. That's interesting. Interesting. That tells me an awful lot. Okay. Beating someone to death with your bare hands or stabbing someone to death?
Oh, Jesus.
I know. You didn't even want to kill bugs, and I've got you beating to death a human.
Well, if it makes you feel better, they were already dead.
No. I mean, ultimately. He means ultimately. Like, every human dies. That's what he's saying.
Neither.
I think I'm
making my own choices.
I've talked to you for like an hour and a half now. I'm gonna say you could beat someone to death with your bare hands.
Could I?
I think you underestimate yourself, and I can actually see it. I can actually see it. I'm a little bit scared of you, to be perfectly honest. I think there's a lot of pent up non-bug killing in you that will just unload on, you know,
especially if
a future corpse.
If for some reason you had knife hands.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Fair enough. I'm glad that you would never kill somebody.
Yeah, that's good.
That's great.
And that you adamantly said your music does not promote murder.
Mm-hmm.
So that's
yeah.
good.
Yeah.
You've had plenty of opportunities to advocate murder tonight, and you've passed every test. Yeah. Not a jury in the world would convict you.
Oh, my God.
The last thing I want to ask you is, what does success mean to you? How do you define success for yourself?
Let me think. Sorry, long silence. But that's a
pregnant pause.
That's a big That's a big question. I feel like I'm already really successful in my own way, which is that I get to do what I love with people that I love. And I'm unbelievably privileged in that. And that, I don't know, that I'm happy doing it. And I get to make music for other people and share it with people. Like, I don't know, that to me is like success, like doing what I love with people that I love.
Well, that sounds like success to me.
Yeah, that's great. Yeah.
It's a perfect way to end.
Okay.
Mariah Mossa, thank you so much for being on the
Thanks
show. We really appreciate you coming
thank
on.
Thank you so much
appreciate
for coming.
It. What's the best way for people to keep track of what you're up to and see you live?
My website, MoreaMossa.com. MoreaMassa.
Yeah.
.com. Or Facebook or Instagram. Just my name.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, thank you again. Really appreciate you being here. Yeah, the album is Shine a Light. It's on Spotify for you cheapskates out there, and it's well worth the listen. But, you know, maybe pay a little bit of money.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and Mariah, go see her play it.
Yeah. Come see us live.
What's the next time we can check you out in Portland?
August 25th at the Aladdin Theater.
Awesome.
And that's going to be a fun one with my boyfriend's band, The Positive Agenda. And then this guy, Alan Stone, is going to come sit in and then with both of our bands. And then Frankie Simone is opening the night, who's like a
awesome
queer pop artist in town. Just super positive, awesome, good human.
Sounds like a wonderful
night. Yeah.
Everybody check it out.
Make sure you
come hang
that.
Out.
Thank you again.
Thank you.
And thank all of you for listening to this episode of Hot Garbage. We really appreciate it. If you like what you heard, and we hope that you did, please tell a friend, tell a neighbor, tell a stranger to check out the show.
Tell your dog.
Tell your dog. I mean, you can tell your dog. I don't want to discourage that, but that's not really doing us any favors. So tell a human. Let's keep it to human.
Okay.
Anyone who could plausibly download the show, as you should do by subscribing on iTunes.
Or really smart dogs. I mean, come on.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Hey, I don't want to rule out dogs. Hey, okay. Let's take a step back. Dogs, humans, anyone who can help Andy, Nate, and I out would be great. You can also help us out non-monetarily by leaving us a review on iTunes. You'd be in good company because we are flush with reviews, and yours would be helpful.
We'd like a couple good ones, though. That'd be great.
Yeah, let's get to 2 stars, huh?
Yeah.
How about that? You can also reach out to Nate, Andy, and I directly via email at hotgarbagepodcast@gmail.com. That's HAUTE, Garbage Podcast. Andy. What are we going out with tonight?
Oh, man, we are in the grips of summer's hot, sweaty grass. Mm-hmm.
This is one of the hottest garages in town. Yeah.
And, you know, this is the perfect time to listen to some real nice lo-fi, chill hip-hop beats.
Yeah, I'm with you.
And
sounds like summer.
This is a producer from Japan called Brock Beats. All one word, BROCKBEATS.
Yes. A lot of Brock things in hip-hop now. Brockhampton's blown up.
Mm-hmm.
Now Brock Beats.
This is not related to that, but it's very good. This is off of his new album. It's called Toy, Toy, Toy. And this song is called Summer's Coming. Oh, sorry. Summer Coming.
Summer, coming. For Mariah Mossa, for Nate, for Andy, this is Drew. We'll see you next week on Hot Garbage.
Bye.
Play that song.